Good morning. Is Kristen coming?
She's on her way down. We had a fire drill, so it took a long time to get back up and back and then down. I'm done, yeah. But we're all here, we're safe. And we know how to evacuate you guys.
Luckily, we have it here now.
Yes.
Okay, good morning. My name is Kristen Miles. Staff Women and Girls, I am calling the Commission of the Staff of Women and Girls to order at 10:04 on May 7th. Would you please take the roll?
Yes. So commissioners, indicate your presence when I call your name. Commissioner Hertz-Mallari, here. Commissioner Brazier-Aceves. Commissioner Mahoney, here. Commissioner Merritt, here. Commissioner White. Commissioner Nashashibi, here. Commissioner Miles. Thank you, and we do have a quorum and just some quick housekeeping before you get started. The agenda for today contains a brief general description of each item to be considered, except as provided by law. No action shall be taken on any item not appearing on the agenda. The commission encourages public participation. Members of the public may request to speak on any item appearing on the agenda or during general public comments. Please complete a speaker request form and turn it into the clerk prior to the reading of the agenda item. Speakers will be given 3 minutes to speak. The clerk will run the timer and announce when your time is up. Public comments may also be submitted electronically by emailing comments@cob.oc.gov. Also, please be aware that the room is microphoned for recording of the meeting. Please keep side conversations to a minimum, and please turn cell phones to mute or vibrate for the duration of the meeting.
Thank you. So I am remiss, and I should have started with the pledge, so I apologize for that. I was so excited about thinking about potentially lifting a baby in here at the honor roll that I just kind of lost sight of that. So if we could all please stand. Put your hand over your heart. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So I'd like to do some and congratulations to Commissioner Nashibi, who is no longer an alternate. You are now officially the other at-large member. And so welcome. Thank you. Glad that you're
welcome.
Commissioner Ramos is the other at-large who unfortunately due to her work could no longer fulfill the commitment as it is one. So we're really appreciative of her time, but also that Commissioner Nashibi, that you're able to dedicate time. And then our alternate for Commissioner Mahoney is coming, but she's not here yet. I can't wait to introduce her.
She's on her way.
She had her
new baby.
And so we're just so thrilled. I'm so thrilled. So we'll stop what we're doing when she comes in so that we can give a quick introduction. If you guys are all okay with that. We've been anticipating her for a while now, and so happy to have her. So do we have any public comment at this time?
We have not received any requests from the public.
Okay. Agenda item number one is to approve the minutes of the April 2nd regular meeting of the commission. Do we have any comments or changes, anything that anybody would like to add or remove? Okay, so do I have a motion to approve the minutes? Do I have a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Any objections? And then item two, we have some special guests. It's a presentation from First Five Children and Families Commission of Orange County. Kim Bowl is President and CEO of First Five Orange County. And once your presentation is over, we're going to open up the floor, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Get some questions. And then do you mind if when our new commissioner comes, if we pause just, or we can wait. It's up to you. I'll leave it.
No.
Okay, fantastic.
It's a new baby. I'm first five. We should celebrate, right?
It's like that poor baby doesn't know it's going to have. welcome, and thank you for coming. This is trying to hone in, as I mentioned, into trying to identify the gaps that our county might have when it comes to caregiving folks and children and older adults. And so having you guys here today is really important, and really looking forward to your presentation. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you. A couple of items. I have a tendency to speak really fast, so if I've gone too fast, please shoot a hand up in the air and slow me down. I've been doing this work for about 25 years, so things roll very fast in my brain, and I don't mean to lose anyone during the presentation. So I'm interested to know how many of you in the room know about First Five and who and what we are. So we got it really, okay, good. So our mission is to ensure that every child reaches its full potential. And we do that by looking at what children need to reach their full potential, what families need to support that child, what communities need, and then what the systems need. And when I'm speaking about systems, I'm thinking about the big bureaucracies that families engage with when they're pregnant and or having their children, and then post-birth, the systems that they engage with. And some of those are very organized systems, like school districts or the healthcare system. And some of them are more disorganized, meaning like even the system that is created within a neighborhood and the communities in which we exist and often learn a lot of information from. So when we think about First Five's work, we're trying to disrupt and understand and all of that to promote a child's potential, right? And we use the word potential because every child's on its own trajectory. And our goal in First Five is to get that trajectory as high as possible, right? To not allow the system barriers to disrupt that trajectory and bring the child down, but also understanding the unique potentials are different for each child. So because you all are familiar with First Five, you know that we are funded almost exclusively by tobacco tax. The majority of our funding coming in is tobacco tax. I am very proud, though, that we raise about 20% in addition to that tobacco tax to round out our funding. So we are on an aggressive campaign to raise money. And the reason that we do that is because tobacco tax declines about 3.5% annually. And then there's been some much more significant declines. We might remember that the voters passed an initiative to remove the flavored tobacco products. Awesome public health. We are super happy about that. I don't want anyone to be confused that First Five is at all rooting for tobacco. We are not. We want tobacco out of the hands of everyone. But we took about a 20% decline unexpected. So try and manage your business with ongoing declines and then a 20% decline with increased public awareness and demand for service. So what you see is the way in which we do our work, we absolutely still buy direct services. So think of a traditional grant maker. We provide funding, you do your service, everybody's happy, right? And we do our grants in long terms. We do them for 3 years so nonprofits can stabilize what their services are that they're providing. They're not riding the flow up and down and whether they got a grant or didn't get a grant from us. We create services and we try and create continuity and stability around those services within the community. So that is the first bullet of direct services. I spoke about this a little bit before. We engage and we put families at the center of what we do. And what that typically means is we listen to them. So families are saying, we need X and Y. We are trying to talk about that topic. We are trying to fund that topic. And we are trying to hold the communities accountable to delivering those services to families. The next bullet is we do a lot of convening. We do a lot of convening because we gather a lot of data. We do a lot of convening because if the systems don't change and we're not educating and small A advocating for different types of systems, we're not going to get the outcomes we all need and want for little kids and older kids, frankly, right? We know that those early years are the foundational for when brain architecture is developed, right? So if we're not investing in early childhood, but we're demanding everyone meet third grade reading scores, it's not going to happen, right? That foundation for that brain is happening in those early years. And again, that last bullet, we collect and use a lot of data. So what I'm going to share with you today is the data that we've been collecting and learning about childcare. This is just one pillar of our work. We have multiple pillars of our work, again, disrupting those systems and holding them accountable. So I'm limiting today's conversation just about childcare, but if you've got questions about other systems that families engage with and data there, we're happy to provide it. Those of you probably know about the Conditions of Children report. We are the data behind the Conditions of Children report, so we have a county contract to develop that report. So we have lots of data that spans not just 0 to 5, because what we're investing early is what we reap later, right? So let's switch gears here and talk about our Orange County childcare landscape. So in 2019, published in 2020, we started our first childcare landscape report. And I think it probably doesn't need to be said in this room, but just so that we're all coming from the same level, we know that when kids are ready to start kindergarten, they're much more likely to graduate high school. They're much more likely to read by third grade. We also know that educational success isn't limited to what we typically think traditionally, which is like, can you hold a pencil? Can you draw a circle or a square or identify those shapes? Can you hold a book appropriately? Those are all really important skills. But oftentimes at the base of early childhood development is social emotional skills. It's that executive function. It's the ability to calm yourself and listen and not be disruptive to your neighbor. It's also pro-social behavior. It's thinking and having empathy for others or being able to communicate. Those are all critical to a child's educational success and often get lost when we think about those strict literacy or math skills that we know are being taught to kids. And in fact, those of you that track First Five, you know that we are the only county in the nation that has a universal kindergarten readiness assessment. It's called Early Developmental Index. School districts get it. We collect that data in partnerships with school districts. It's delivered back to the districts, but we also speak about it in aggregate and across the county and work with cities and others so that everyone understands how ready kids are for kindergarten. So we can tell you by the census tract how ready the kids in that census are for kindergarten, and then you can kind of plot what those kids are going to look like as they age into the educational system.
Are we allowed to ask questions?
Absolutely. Please stop me.
Since you're on the kindergarten, where does TK fit in that? Like, so our district, our school district, really promoted and did a lot of great work on that TK.
Yep.
So or TK, whatever you want to call it, that's TK. So.
Well, it's fantastic, right? That the idea that we are now, as public school institutions are now being able to provide educational experiences younger is great. What we'll show here in our data, though, is it's going to be incredibly disruptive to the childcare field. You took the only kids, the state of California made a policy that took the kids that balance the revenue in childcare and gave them to the school districts. And family, that is a free resource for families. It's also great for schools. There's nothing necessarily bad here, but if we don't fix, yes, well, and it's a reimbursement rate issue, right? You cannot, this is a market failure. Childcare providers cannot stay in business at the current reimbursement rates if they're only going to serve 0, 1, and 2. So we need to think about a mixed delivery source to help that ease that transition and or increase reimbursement rates. Ah, baby is here. I will pause and let you all welcome a new baby.
Thank you. I am Crystal Miles. Very nice to meet you. We're so thrilled you are here. We all are dying to see the baby. Oh, yay. So we wanted to say welcome and have you.
Absolutely.
With First Five here.
Absolutely.
Which we actually use with my son.
Oh, fantastic.
So welcome. We're so glad you're here. Thank you for coming. We know how hard it is trying to balance all that. So we're just so grateful. And if you need to leave or move, no apologies. Just do your thing.
I appreciate it.
We're so happy to have you. And when your arms get tired, I'm first.
Yeah, I was going to say priority is chair, right?
I'm clean. I'm healthy.
Chair,
okay.
Right? I mean.
Okay.
Exactly.
Beautiful baby.
Fire your game.
Okay, thank you.
Official.
Yay! Yeah. All right, so we are getting some very good information about the effects of having a TK program in kindergarten. So I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah. So while I think it's, again, good public policy, we need to make sure that we're shoring up that infant and toddler childcare space. And again, there'll be more slides about it. So I again, it's one of those things just like smoking. I don't want any confusion. I think it is a good forward momentum to think about early educational spaces as public goods and being available for the public. I think that we have to be careful that we don't disrupt to the point of where we are right now, frankly, is a market failure for that infant and toddler childcare. So let me go to the next slide. This just helps put in perspective the number of kids we're talking about, right? So 0 to 5 kids in Orange County, we have about 200,000 of them. The ones that I think are most critically in need of childcare are that 63,000, the darkest blue box. The 2 to 5-year-olds is about 140,000. So just to show the breakdown and distribution of the population of early childhood. So what we know about childcare is that we have high demand for it and low supply. The other thing we know is the workforce. We have a lack of qualified staff due to low reimbursement, low wages for childcare, and a really high burnout rate. Hours are long, it's emotionally intensive, and you're not really getting paid a living wage in most cases to provide childcare. We also know that in our county, we have large geographic disparities. In some areas of the county, we have no licensed slots for 0 to 2-year-olds. And we have equity concerns. Similar to the geographic disparities, we have underserved communities disproportionately affected, and you can imagine why. If you can't pay market rate childcare providers are not going to go into those communities. And we don't have a fix for that system. There is no fix in place. Okay, so what our landscape analysis showed to us, and this also is a little bit to your question about TK or pre-universal preschool. So the urgency that we have right now is in infant and toddler childcare. We have one licensed slot for every 8 children demand against that slot. So 8 little kids, 1 slot. In that younger childcare, we have 2 kids for every 1 slot in the preschool age, right? So you can imagine what this is creating, right? So we don't have good placements for the infant and toddlers. And what we do know is when you can find a licensed slot, it's likely going to price you out. It's about $15,000 per infant. It can go as high as $40,000 for 2 kids in childcare annually for market rate. And for those of you that are like, oh, that's market rate. We have lots of subsidized childcare. Let me put that notion aside. We in Orange County serve 4% of families that are eligible for subsidized childcare. That means 96% of working individuals that need childcare to get to that job are left to deal with it on their own. So you can imagine between our availability of licensed slots and our inability to deal with subsidized childcare, there are a lot of families making very, very difficult choices about who's going to care for their children. We also know that those are the most important brain-building years of a kid, and babies don't wait. They don't wait till the system solves this problem. They're developing. So the more that we are providing them positive, educational rich experiences, that brain is growing, that foundation is getting stronger. The more they are starved from those experiences, the more those delays are happening, the trajectory will be stunted.
Okay. Can we get this presentation?
Absolutely. And these facts are all on our website as well, but we're happy to send you the presentation.
When you mentioned subsidized childcare, would that be like through the Children's Home Society?
Children's Home Society or Orange County Department of Ed are our two premier subsidy.
So when you say only 4% of families that qualify, is that So does that mean families that are applying are not able to get the support, or it's 4% of the families that qualify are applying?
No, that means 4% of the people that apply. It's both?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm looking at our experts so I don't misspeak.
Yeah, families that qualify don't know that they qualify. The income limits are pretty high. It's like $104,000 a year for a family of four. So I think families are assuming they don't qualify, so they're not applying. But then also the families that aren't applying aren't accessing the funds because there's no slot. There's no place for them to go with their child.
What I've noticed, so I actually work for OCDE, but I work in our access schools. So I've helped families apply, but I remember folks sharing, like from the agencies, that you have to find an agency, and you have to find an agency that will accept that rate, and there may be an additional cost. Like if, say, I want to go to this place because this is a great place and it's near me and everything, they may, to your point, that might not cover the whole cost.
Yes, you got it exactly right. So, yeah, even if there are the lucky families that get the voucher and they can take that voucher and go wherever they would like to purchase childcare, many places will not take that voucher. Or if they do take it, there might be additional fees on top of that, or they will not be able to find, go back to some communities don't even have any licensed facilities in close approximation to their job or where they live. Yeah. Thank you for that question. Any other ones? Awesome. Okay. The terminology that's used in the field is child care desert. We are, in fact, a child care desert in Orange County. So if you hear that terminology, what that means is if there's 50 kids in a community, you have one license slot for three of those kids. That is the technical definition of a child care desert. You can see that we far exceed that definition. Okay. So let's move on. In Orange County's way of, or Orange County First Five's way of dealing with a lot of these system barriers, one of the things we try and do is make kids' issues bigger than families and bigger than the kid. It is a system issue. It is a community issue. We all want our high school kids to graduate and go on and be prosperous. We want families to stay in Orange County. We want to be an economically thriving environment. So part of the ways that we do this is we try and figure out what is going to make childcare come off the page to our business employers or our city folks or just community at large? And so when we did the landscape analysis, we supplemented that with an economic impact analysis. And this is, I think, something that you all are fairly familiar with, but this stacks costs of living in Orange County, that's the bar chart, with and adds childcare on top of it, and then it stacks income along. So that very lowest line is the federal poverty level. Then there's the two minimum wage jobs level, and those are don't even make it halfway up the stacked bar chart. And then what you see at the very top and added to the top is childcare, and that's the median income. So if you're doing really well in Orange County and you're young and you're having your children, you're likely not able to pay for childcare. If you're making 171 is the median income, and your child If you're making $160,000, which is the median income, your total costs to live here are roughly $171,000. So you're going to fall short on that anyways. So I always like to tell people that some of our best exports are families with young children. You know, highly qualified, workforce eligible families leaving Orange County because they can't afford to live here. And it is housing, and it is all these other costs as well, but it's child care oftentimes is the thing that puts them over the edge, and they start looking for a different place to live because they can no longer live here. A lot of folks, so when we did this, again, what we were trying to do is appeal to a broader audience, make child care more relevant to in Orange County. So I'm a single individual, don't want to have a family, I'm not married, but I'm a go-getter and I'm invested in Orange County's economic development. What we are trying to do is explain to that person why they should care. And the reason that they should care is that Orange County loses about $5.5 billion annually in productivity and wages because folks are electing to get out of the workforce, or they're making do with less work. So they're working part-time, or they didn't take the promotion, or they didn't take a job, and therefore their productivity is less, and companies aren't able to reach their full potential because they don't have an active and engaged workforce at the level that they could, which then equates to about $536 million of lost tax revenue, obviously, and then the job loss, which is about 71,000. And you can see the numbers in parens at the bottom of the circles. That's the change from the first time we did the economic landscape report in 2020 and when we redid it in 2025. So this problem is getting worse. It is not getting better. We are not making headway on this, but we are making headway in terms of gaining public acknowledgement and support for trying to come about a fix for childcare. We are gaining more and more folks that are interested in dealing and tackling this issue. Oftentimes folks want to know a little bit more about what this is look like in the actual workforce. We know that 1 in 5 parents arrive late to work, 1 in 6 have to leave early, 1 in 8 will reduce their hours or not move to a full-time or a different job because of childcare issues, and 1 in 10 resign from their or lose their regular job due to childcare challenges. And I know as someone who worked all through raising 3 children, I had quite a bit of privilege, yet I at least did the top 2 multiple times in a month. It's just that I had a master's degree, I had worked for 10 years before that, and I had a boss that wanted to keep me. And so he understood that this was a period in my life, right? So those of us that are on the side of privilege, and I had grandparents and aunts and uncles and everything you could imagine to make this as smooth as possible, and I still couldn't deliver to be on work on time and leave on time and work 5 days a week. Never happened for me from when my kids were little until they got established into school. Okay, so then let's transition if we're good with economic. Let's talk a little bit about First Five and what we are doing to invest in this. So I want to ground us all that we only have about $15 million a year. Thank you, sin taxes, they work. No one should ever not believe that sin taxes work. But what we've done here over the last 25 years is we've driven up, again, public awareness about the importance of First 5 years. And early in the First Five history, we bought a lot of services for kids. We disrupted that environment. We paid for a lot of stuff for kids. As our revenue has declined, we've had to shift how we do business. We've had to think about it differently because we don't have the amount of money to continue to buy services at the levels that we did. So one of the shifts that we've made is really to focus on systems, focus on collaboration, focus on how can we lend our data, our convening, and our accountability to try and shift the systems and look at different and exciting new ways to solve problems. So for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been engaged in workforce development around childcare. We have a robust group of folks that are part of a cross-sector task force around childcare. So this includes our city folks, this is employers, this is faith-based, this is folks that provide childcare, trying to think about what are some solutions. We have a childcare systems collaborative. Those are folks that actually work in the system to try and make the system better and more responsive. And then we have some additional work efforts that have, as they come along, we help to dive in with our data and the work that we can do. So to take a few minutes and talk about workforce development, what this really looks like is how do we create more folks that want to be in the workforce environment? So think apprenticeships. So getting folks into childcare while they're getting their early childhood credits. Exposing them to the workforce, what that looks like, so maybe we can reduce burnout. They're more ready to work, and then we link them if they've been through an apprenticeship program with agencies that are ready to hire them right away. So we're closing that gap for them. They're not without work for a long time. We have about 6 employers that are working actively right now in those apprenticeship programs. We also work to increase quality. Through our Quality Start, it's a partnership with OCDE. And we specifically provide additional quality type services, so improving the quality in family, friends, and neighbors. So a lot of times those folks that are having to make childcare adjustments because they can't afford the market rate or they don't have access to a voucher, they might be using a friend's family and neighbor to get that childcare and being able to pay them slightly less maybe than market. There might be something that's worked out. So how do we promote quality with those environments? How do we make sure that those folks really understand that they have a precious duty, which is to give the most positive environment to that little kid as its brain is developing, and that putting them in a bouncy seat is not a good idea. We need to get them out moving. We need to talk to them. We need to play with them. And how do we supplement their own knowledge with additional skills and support to create that quality, that high quality. We also have been working with economic development. We have a good partnership with the Orange County Business Council. We are part of their policy agenda. So when they're up in Sacramento, they're talking about a need to fix childcare in order for Orange County's economic development to last. We were lucky as a county to get the Jobs First grant. First Five is a sector organizer of that, and we focus on childcare so that we're not making investments in workforce development that don't include childcare, that we're talking openly with employers and giving them tools about how they could be thinking about childcare, how they could be working with their employees about childcare. Not a conversation to be hidden about, but a conversation that you can actually have with them and what are the resources. To talk a little bit more about some of the innovative strategies, we also launched a business incubator in partnership with a nonprofit that helps build folks that have an interest in childcare. We wrap that around with Small Business Administration support. So they're thinking about their childcare as a small business in their home. At the same time, they're getting training around quality childcare. So that is a cohort model. We've had 89 participants go through that cohort model. I'm sorry, we have 89 that are licensed that have gone through it. We have more than 89 that have gone through it, but 89 that have gotten to licensure. We have another 9 that are in the pathway. That's created 267 infant and toddler childcare slots and 700 preschool slots. And again, that ratio is because of the reimbursement rates and licensing requirements. So while you could scratch your head and say, why aren't there all infant and toddlers? But if they were all infant and toddlers, those businesses would not be sustainable. They wouldn't be able to make enough money to stay.
A couple of questions. How do people in the community know about this program in order to be part of the cohorts? That's one. And then working with the Orange County Business Council and working with employers, is there a certain industry, a certain size, business size, where they're more apt to provide childcare from what you've seen?
Yeah, so let me start with your first one. We promote the business incubator primarily through our partner in that, which is Cielo, which is a nonprofit organization that helps to partner with individuals on their business adventure. So they find entrepreneurial folks, but we also now have a couple of other through Jobs First, right? Additional, where that program, that model is expanding. It's not just First Five anymore. We have several other folks that are coming online and partnering with Small Business Administration and also training. So we promote through Cielo, we put through our website and our newsletters. SBDC as well, small business. So we do our best, but we also are really cognizant. And I think the last couple cohorts have been way outpaced what we thought, and we actually had to contribute more money outside of what we had budgeted because we have such a high interest in this program. So we have to be cautious that we are not driving up demand past what First Five can continue to fund for it. Supervisor Sarmiento put some of his discretionary funds, and we will be doing a cohort specific to his district with his funding. So we are looking for partnerships and funding to continue to grow that program. It is there's a lot of interest in it, and I think it's a model that works. I would be remiss if I didn't say that the SBDC side of it is free. First Five is funding the quality side of it, and then we also fund mentors. So when folks start their business, they have a mentor that is already providing and has been successfully providing in-home childcare. So we partner them together
And so they have a small business mentor and they have a childcare mentor, because what we can't afford is putting all this effort into getting this licensed childcare out and then it collapsed because of business pressures. The other thing that we do, it's another way we engage with employers, is we can plot where these are geographically. And we've started to outreach to employers to say, hey, you have some childcare providers within your catchment here, right around your employment. You could offer this to your employees. So if they're looking for cost-sensitive childcare that's high quality, here's four or five providers that are in the neighborhoods that are close and adjacent to your work. You asked me a question about OCBC and employers, size and scale for, you don't see on-site childcare that often. We have Applied Medical, which is a huge advocate for it, and part of one of our task force, they sit and help educate and inform other businesses. We've had several childcare companies who provided childcare, then close up childcare. A lot of that has to do with risk, underutilization, not being able to provide, find a provider that can provide it on site in a way and a quality that meets everybody's needs.
Liability.
And I would argue that you know, if I had a magic wand, that's great. If we have employers that want to do it, I wouldn't take it away from an employer to do it. But I think we have to come up with more creative solutions, right? They're in the business of doing products and services. We as a community need to figure out how to do childcare in a way that complements business, but not on the backs of business. So there's lots of other strategies, but we got to be.
Businesses in Orange County that provide, unless it's only Applied Medical in RSM. So we can.
Taco Bell does. Disney. Well, Disney provides vouchers, not on site, correct?
Right.
So a lot of other employers might provide their employees a voucher or have a relationship with a child care provider, which is different than on site.
Just a question on the Christmas train. Is that just 1 year? Is that over 5 years?
No, it's actually a pretty quick. How many weeks is it?
It's 6 weeks.
6 weeks of training, but then the licensure will follow after that, which is, it could take 6 months. So we do our training, then they go to the licensure.
So this 89, this is in the last 6 months.
Yeah. The cohorts have been running for about 2 years. So we've trained 500 participants. 89 have gotten their license.
Okay.
And then some are like, I'm not ready yet, so they may be waiting. And then we have the 9 that are in the process because it varies on how long it takes, because that's a state system. The licensing process comes down from the state.
Right.
Yeah.
So some people have gone through the training and might be working on a living situation that's more conducive to licensure or whatnot, but we're holding them and we're in constant contact with them. If they've graduated, we're still working with them through
some
licensure.
Some of them are working as FFN, so they're family, friend, or neighbor providers. And then when they're ready, they'll go back and get their license. But they're just not ready yet.
One more question on that route. So let's say that I am one of the 89. What is my requirement for recertification or retraining? Is it all through the state, or do I ever have to come back to you?
You not have to come back to us, although all of our resources are available to you and resources through our partnership with OCDE that are funded in multiple ways. All the training that is provided via the state, either State Department of Education and or the State Department of Social Services provides a lot of funding for continuing and ongoing training. So once you get our services, part of that training is how do you access continued training. There, didn't miss anything? Sorry.
Do you see any businesses partnering with school districts to connect them with the ECE programs in the school districts?
I don't think we have, but it's, I mean, it's an interesting, particularly as school districts go lower in the age gap, that is a great thing. We do have some school districts, though, and I'm really proud of this. Christina's done great work here looking at infant and toddler, the provision of infant and toddler. So as we know, we have declining student enrollment, so that means we have empty classrooms. Classrooms make for great childcare settings potentially. So Westminster, Buena Park,
and I think Orange is talking about
Orange are thinking about starting and opening their class. And again, it's the business model is going to look different depending on the district. Some of them might just lease out their space and section off that part of the campus and allow a provider to come in on site with a favorable lease term to make it more doable in terms of the profit, if you will, or the balance sheet. Others might actually take it on themselves and provide that infant and toddler childcare on site with their own district staff. It can look many different ways. We're promoting that. We think that is potentially a part of the solution of this, right? Because what's going to get us out of the 1-to-8 ratio is all of these solutions. It is not one magic bullet. We don't have one. Okay. Some other interesting things that are happening throughout the state, just to give you some context. And I think, so Marin and San Diego County have created like a strategic plan for childcare. So thinking, if those of you that are understand urban and regional planning, maybe this would be like a traffic strategic plan or a housing strategic plan. They have created a childcare strategic plan. So they are acknowledging the gaps in their system, and they are building a strategic plan that closes those gaps. I think this is a fantastic work effort. I think Orange County is well placed to be able to do this, given the infrastructure that we've put in place, either with the data and with our convenings of community partners and the buy-in on the business council, frankly, and many cities are also bought into the childcare desert and that things need to be done to change this if we want to be economically viable. The other thing, and I'm always sensitive about, I'm not necessarily promoting this, I just think it's interesting and we should start talking about it, is you have the County of Alameda is taxing themselves. You'll see the first thing that they're going to do with that tax is create childcare. Again, this is a market failure. This is not something that capitalism is going to solve for us. It's just, we have to treat childcare more like a public good, like our educational systems or our roads. It's unlikely that the market is going to solve this problem on its own. It hasn't yet. Families can't afford childcare at the cost it would take to make it be profitable. Or a small portion of the population can do that. I should change my verbiage. So anyways, Alameda has passed Measure C. Again, they're going to use a significant chunk of that money to create additional childcare slots. And most recently, we saw Sonoma do the exact same thing. Childcare is what they're going to do. They have a quarter of a cent. It's called Measure I. And they will start developing childcare as well, along with a lot of other things. So I want to be clear that it was more comprehensive in nature, but childcare is what led both of those initiatives. Also, I think I went over on time, and I apologize.
No, this is
great. Thank you.
Fantastic. So much information. And on one hand, things sound like really great. And on the other hand, it's kind of like, oh. Yeah.
We just need to work harder.
Do we have any other questions?
First of all, Kim, thank you so much for your passionate commitment and advocacy for early childhood. And you know, you and First Five have made a huge impact on the community. As we're, you know, we have some overlap, right, in our interests. Is there anything that we could do to amplify your messaging for you, for First Five?
Yeah, I mean, I shared with the chair before the meeting and with you, First Five stands ready to partner and collaborate and come together on getting this work out, this information out specific to childcare, but we have, again, other work efforts that intersect with the work that we're doing here. So I really do think about spaces that you all are in where we could be bringing this information in partnership, right? Because I shared also with the chair that I am part of that sandwich generation. So the work that you guys are doing on caregiving, many of our families are smack in the middle of that as well, with an older parent and young children and trying to make it all work. So this is an element of that bigger problem. And I think the more that we can get the community talking about it and trying to come up with solutions, right? There's, again, it's not going to be a one solution. So whether it's your school boards, I know many of you are on school boards, whether it's city councils, really getting an everybody activated around childcare the same way that we hear so much about workforce housing or affordable housing. But I think we need to be more solution oriented with it. I think talking about the problem and admiring a problem is great, but back to, I think I said it earlier in my presentation, babies' development does not wait. And every day there is a child born, multiple children born, that is dependent on a system of care that we are not delivering them as a community. And we do not have enough babies to waste them, right? The economic load on every child born is so much more than in our generation of children, because we are aging population and we are exiting our workforce. So I try and speak in terms of economic development, because I think for folks that don't love babies and get all gooey-eyed when we see one, maybe the economic development will work. So we are open to any spaces that you think First Five should be in to help share the data and start to get a more powerful group of people speaking to the crisis that is childcare.
My question is, have you, I mean, so you're open to partnering with cities, right? And they can start their own until our county have a workplace or a system for that. What about Rotary? Have you approached Rotary? Rotary International Foundation now? Okay, maybe I can.
That would be great.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you so much. This presentation was incredible, and thank you for your insights. I'm very fortunate to have you with us today. As far as I'm thinking about school districts, I also serve on the school board with Santa Ana Unified, and so many things that you're talking about are things that we're also exploring, right, and I'm super excited about. I'm wondering about the ages 0 to 2, and I was just texting our superintendent. I was like, does the state reimburse us for, you know, I know we go as low as 2. So what would that look like? Obviously, there's the option of renting out space with declining enrollment. So I love that as looking for solutions, right, amidst an issue that we have, two issues that we have. But as far as state reimbursement or reimbursement methods, is there any advice you would give school districts to look at?
Sure. I mean, I first and foremost, and I might lean on Christine here, There's CCTR, which is a funding source. There's the other vouchers, correct? I mean, you could be a voucher recipient. So we talked a little bit about families that can get access to a voucher, oftentimes can't find a provider that will take the voucher. So that's, school districts could become someone that took vouchers. Again, there's the CCTR. Child care funding, which comes from the Department of Social Services.
Yeah, and you may already have that at your district,
okay,
because a lot of districts use it for after school programming, because general child care is 0 to 12. Mm-hmm. Most districts have CCTR, so you would just have to adjust your funding to serve younger kids, but you can use it for that whole gamut, the whole age group. So that would be something, I mean, that would be an easy switch for your district if you, because you also have ELOP, which is the expanded learning funding. So if you have two buckets of funding for after school programming, why not move some of that over and serve your younger kiddos in a different way? And then you have an early learning specialist at your district who I think could help you see what funding they're receiving that could serve younger children. The state preschool funds, now you can enroll a 1.9-year-old in state preschool. So some districts aren't open to it yet because that's diapering, right? There's a little more work than just serving of toddlers, but you can receive state preschool for the 1.9-year-olds too.
So one thing to note for those of you that are engaged with your school boards, First Five funds every single school district in Orange County. We partner on the collection of that early developmental index, but you also have someone that has partnered with our team and can work through what your district's funding mechanisms are and how, what are the opportunities and what have we learned from other school districts. So I would ask the superintendent to go back to his own early learning specialist and then get in contact with our team. We have a team of folks that work with all of our school districts.
Do you have a counterpart in LA County?
Yes, there is a First Five in every single county in the state of California, all funded by tobacco tax.
And is that Keeley?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's who it is.
Thank you. And I know I met with her recently and she shared that some of our programs are just part day.
Yeah.
So my ask was, I think there is a demand. So let's look at full day. And it does come, and just for the team, because I think this is relevant to as we explore this. I think if I remember correctly, it had some, you know, it comes back to like funding too, right? Like, then we're, you know, are we leaning more on general fund and things like that to fill the gaps.
Yeah.
And I was also curious about students with disabilities or children. Are most vulnerable. Are they also in the same group, or is there additional supports for them? Are they also their families?
If you have a child with a disability and you are trying to find childcare, it is almost an impossible task. That problem, like the 4% unsubsidized, gets so much worse if you are subsidized and have a child with a disability and you are trying to find childcare. It's almost non-existent.
I thought you were going to say they have the priority.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. So you have Head Start you can go to, but let me be clear that Head Start in our county has about 1,300 slots, might be as much as 1,500 slots. So you're not talking about a lot of Head Start slots. They would have priority at a Head Start. You have Beyond Blindness, which is in Tustin. They do a fantastic job, but still very limited, and they're a fundraising. Like, they are a nonprofit, just fundraising to provide childcare. And of course, they blend and braid their funding, so they're getting all available funding. But no, it is an absolute challenge. It's we had a member of our board who has a child with disabilities, and listening to her struggles of trying to get childcare has been heart-wrenching. And just, it doesn't exist. It does not exist in any sort of percentage that would make it meaningful.
Thank you for sharing. Talking about a population that needs
absolutely
extra support at that age.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
And may we get a business card of someone that we can follow up with?
Yeah, absolutely. I have business cards. I'll leave them with your clerk. Yeah.
Quick, Kim, are you aware of any, is anything happening at the state level? Any kind of Sacramento, I haven't had to track this for a long time, to address be it rates or any of these other issues?
There has been conversations about rate. I'm going to look at Tiffany and she can correct me if I'm wrong. These are two phenomenal powerhouses around childcare and all things First Five. I have to tell you, that's why I keep looking at them, and I apologize. So there has been ongoing conversation about rate range. There was also conversation when the governor decided to bring school the age of PK, UPK or TK. There was a lot of education about what that would do to the child care delivery system. There has been no substantive change at this point. So there's a lot of advocacy and no change. And basically, it's, you know, we're in a budget crisis as it is, so this is not a good time to ask for more money. Fair? Anything I missed?
So the normal, right? That's rate reimbursement. They are looking at the market rate, and they're supposed to be coming out with some new market rate costs for childcare, and then hoping to increase the reimbursement rates. But with where we're at the state budget, it's unlikely to happen. And the child care union continues to be a huge advocate for that reimbursement. And then also the additional slots that the state was supposed to put out back in 2020. Still, we're still not back to where we were before COVID. So.
Okay, any other comments? Well, this has been very enlightening, very educational. We do have a lot more work to do. So grateful for you and your team. I can probably honestly say without you guys, I'd be in a lot more situations. So your passion for this is definitely comes through. And as someone who was much more ignorant about it 2 hours ago, thank you so much.
Yeah, anytime I can be of service, I'm happy to be here. Thank you. Thank you for the work that you all do.
Thank you.
We will definitely be in touch, because I can guarantee you we're probably going to want to have you come back.
It would be great.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to agenda item 3, caregiving for affordable access. So we all were sent the link for to be able to put our name down on who we wanted to contact or reach out to be able to get some information, depending on what area we were comfortable with. And so I just wanted to bring this up to just kind of remind everyone, if you haven't, the next meeting, we're gonna start the meeting, do the pledge, introduction, see the protocol, then we're gonna close the meeting, and the meeting, we're gonna get into a work study session where hopefully everybody comes with some information and data on what they found. Obviously, you know, what we have to support here with what we're seeing. So I don't expect all of this to be filled in, but if we could make sure that you put your name down, and if your name hasn't been put down, please do so. like I said, we have 1 month. So if you haven't already started reaching out, contact me. But also, there's questions with it too, right? So do we have the questions that we put in there? No, it's a separate thing.
Here, I printed them out.
So you don't have to follow these questions. You can do your own questions or anything, but I just wanted to kind of remind everyone, please be prepared, because and you know, bring lunch, bring whatever, dress comfortably. I really want us to be able to kind of share what each person found from the areas that they went and contacted and how we think it's relevant to the report and what we think, you know, we can all decide at that time. We want to really hone in more on this. This we think will be covered because we're going to hone in over here, or now that we have more information, like especially for first five, let's really direct it more towards this area. So really do a working session where everybody's opinions are going to be really important.
Are we going to do a longer meeting, June 5th?
Hopefully we can do it in the 2 hours, because we could literally sit here all day, right? We could order Postmates, but I'd like to keep it within the 2 hours and just have that fine line, and then be able to come up with a solid plan. Yes, ma'am.
Did you figure out logistics of how you're doing it? Are you just keeping it the meeting open to the public?
Well, so what I thought, yes, but I mean, I thought, yeah, it would definitely be open to the,
I wasn't sure. I just wanted to ask, because yeah, I know she and I were not here last.
So my thought is this. So we would open the meeting like normal, and then we would adjourn to a open work study session, which is still an open meeting, but at least that way now it's a work study session. If that's okay.
Is there any reason it just can't be agendized as like working session?
Working session on the agenda.
Yeah. Okay. Like,
all right.
Definitely. Perfect. Yeah, you want to provide that notice.
Yep. All right. Great.
Okay.
A work study session is a chance to do work.
We're gonna discuss all the yes, a chance to, for us to come up with an actual plan, have like maybe break out the little groups.
Yeah.
Or is it just discussion? I mean, there's got to be some broad term.
I envision us being able to like go into a couple little groups and then come together, you know, like when your ad hoc groups kind of talk and what you guys can coalesce to be able to say, like, well, this is what we feel, and the other group says this is how we feel, and then we all talk about this group.
Are you going to vote on it? Anything? Are you voting?
I don't think there'll be a vote. I think there will be a direction.
I'm sensitive.
Like a direction, you know?
Okay.
We'll get an idea of a direction that we want to go.
Strategic planning session?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question for Ronak, because this has come up for us. Are we able to break out into groups?
As long as it's part of the meeting, I believe so.
The conversation isn't like heard by everyone.
Okay.
Because a question I've heard come up before in other spaces is if we break up into groups, then not everybody's hearing the same discussion. And I don't know. I don't know if that
was in the same room. Can we be on two sides of the room, three of us?
Is there a Brown Act violation?
That might be an issue. We can't hear the discussions. So I'd want to look into that.
Yeah, sorry. I hesitated. I didn't want to make it an issue, but I've had that come up before. And we opted not to do that. I don't know how folks do these kinds of sessions otherwise.
In my experience, where we've done it in, you know, for public agencies, we've done the breakouts in the same room. If there are public members here, they can walk around, they can listen, and each group does a report out. And then that report out is part of the public discussion that everybody's able to hear. Because I think a lot of us do strategic planning in our cities.
I mean, we're not all large.
These would not be your ad hoc groups. Conversely, they would be different groups. Because an ad hoc course is permitted, and that is an exception to the Brown Act.
Well, it would be that. It would be all of us, but I was just going to, like, say, okay, you know, you guys want to get together and discuss really fast what's really what you guys want to bring forward, and then we all are discussing together. Like, we're all in the same room. It's just maybe a couple of us go there.
I mean, we're not that talking about large groups, maybe we can all discuss it at the same time.
You could just do in the moment ad hocs. Okay. So make sure they're formulated that way, and then you report out to the larger group, and that's permitted.
Yeah.
And that would be in safe land, safe territory.
That's each breakout ad hoc would be less than a quorum.
Yeah.
And then come back to the larger group to discuss.
A specific task for that limited time, which would be that hour or whatever it is.
And well, I was thinking 10, 15 minutes. They each kind of discuss, like, because I haven't been a part of each of their ad hocs. So they would be able to discuss. And even if they already came ahead of time and said, like, well, we already know what we're going to present forward, then that would be fine too. And then just 10, 15 minutes. And then all of us get together and go, okay, well, this is the direction. This is like, I'm not part of any ad hoc, but I have my own information I'm bringing to be able to say, like, this is the direction. So I'd be able to call out too.
Less than a quorum for a limited amount of time, whatever you deem.
Okay, perfect.
That's good. And I know that our ad hoc, it would be good to have it kind of together.
Okay, fantastic. All right, well, are there any comments or discussions or suggestions for agenda items?
I just wanted to do just a quick report out, if that would be okay. I went and spoke at a women's organization called Zontas.
Zonta International.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, they are.
They were just lovely. They had wanted to learn about our commission, and they had sent a request. I think it went to Valerie. So we talked, and I was able to go and represent us. And I really, what I was impressed with is the advocacy that the women in this group are already doing. They actually have a seat at the UN where they are able to, this organization has a lot of opportunity to talk to people. And they wanted to learn more about us and what we're doing and how we collaborate, you know, not just across Orange County, but the state. And so just reminds me of the large number of organizations that are out there that we're going to make sure we want to engage with as we move forward. You know, a lot of people doing amazing work, and their experience and their voice, I think, is important to inform us in our work. I think we can learn as they, you know, we're interested in learning about us. So if we in the future do focus groups or something like that, there are definitely people in that organization that want to participate. They probably had me going for about an hour.
Wow.
So it was
I'm glad you were able to go.
Yeah, it was a lovely experience, and appreciated that. And then what I did, as far as leave behinds, is I printed a bunch of I call it the one sheet, but it's the two sheet.
I'm so sorry, we have the pages.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, I didn't mind. I have a printer. I took care of printing, I don't know, 150 of them or something. But so I still have some left. And it was it prints beautifully. It looks great. And I think it really carries forward our message. And just encourage everybody to use these materials that we have, that the staff put together. They're great.
They have various chapters at Zonta International. Mm-hmm. And they also have like a region meeting. I spoke at a regional meeting, so they're a great group to. We work with them, Global Hope 365, on the ending child marriage issue.
That is something they're very passionate about.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I have one too. So you go first. I don't remember the date.
I don't remember the name. But I did attend in La Habra the presentation for the Conditions of Children report. So I appreciate everything we heard today. And I just want to say that some of, like, the heat maps showing, like, readiness for kindergarten and, you know, was referred to in this presentation. But if you have a chance to really look at that report, some of those heat maps are really jarring to see the, like, lack of childcare providers and how that translates. Like you can just see it on the maps. And so seeing those right on the boards, it was really kind of in your face much more. I rationally it makes sense when we hear it in a presentation like this, but just looking at the map, it's like complete. I'm gonna go with
but can, I think it's causation, right? You just see it flow through in terms of kids who are or are not ready, the economic factors, the availability of childcare, like it's all just flows through. So I would just encourage everyone to look at that. It was a really great event, so very well done.
Where are we taking a look at that?
In the conditions of children to look for.
That we are really starting to understand. I'll speak for me because I maybe you all are years ahead, but really starting to understand it's a crisis. Like I never viewed it as a crisis, but it actually is kind of, I think, more on the lines of a crisis because these are our future. And when we have, you know, a gap or lacking in accessibility, those children are immediately disadvantaged. So this could be, in my mind, you know, sort of more of a crisis. On a positive note, I was invited to attend the Women Leadership Luncheon that was held at the Avenue of the Arts. Look up the date. It was in the last month. It was April 17th, and it was lovely and lots of information, and they gave a shout out to our report. So that was really excellent with the QR code on there and all people at my table. I was like, I know all of you put this together. And I said, yes, it's really good. So they all understand it. So do we have any metrics or any way of measuring how many people actually go to QR code and pull it up? Or? Do we know that? Is that something we could?
We can, yeah.
I thought I asked them to set that up when I had them launch it. But then, oh no, I'm thinking of a different one because it's on your website.
Yeah.
Christina. Okay, yeah.
Oh, please.
Would
I know that one.
Yeah.
I'm not
getting
this
feeling
about 2 seconds.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's the loudest
little
thing.
No, he's so good, actually.
I'm glad that OCIT can look and see how many hits.
So yeah. We need to know next meeting, maybe if we can have an update on how, you know, kind of how many hits or whatever. Because I'll tell you, that luncheon, everyone was like, wow, there's a report. Yes, there is. So that was really cool. And okay, I really appreciate
yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we need to click on the report.
I think click.
Yeah, I think we
can click the link.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, we will look into that, and if it isn't already enabled, like that, enable it. Because okay. I'm not sure if it was done on the first one.
And then, does county staff have any updates or anything you want to add?
We
don't have any.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah. First, apologies because I was supposed to go speak at Harvard on April 16, and then my knee gave out on April 15. So needless to say, neither that nor the conference in D.C. I could go to, so I had to cancel all those. And I wasn't able to go to the city councils during that period. I just started driving yesterday.
So if you need some help, I'm happy to help if you have something that you need done. So.
Okay, thanks. But that's and yesterday I spoke before the Long Beach Rotary Club. It's one of the largest globally, one of the 50 largest globally, and they're phenomenal. They have three different foundations, and that's why I thought it should be, but then the one in LA, the first five in LA most probably, but they have a good size funds, and they were very appreciative of the information about child marriage and human trafficking. It's unfortunately still a lot of people don't know that it's legal in the U.S. in 34 out of the 50 states still. And just on outstanding news, the state of Oklahoma just passed legislation to end child marriage under 18. It passed through the House and the Senate, and now it went to the governor. And Oklahoma was one of the four states, including California, that had zero minimum age. So they went from zero to no child marriage under 18, no exception. Sorry, Liz.
Oh, no, please, that's important to hear. And I, when you first mentioned that, I had no idea, mm-hmm. right? And I, so to me, it was something that I thought, I hope that they are explore as a commission, you know, how to create some advocacy for us in California, having some sort of, you know, some law.
We authored a resolution that we've been passing in cities and counties. And so we passed it in 16 out of the 34 cities in Orange County. There's a couple of cities in LA and in the county of Santa Clara. And currently working on our county. So that's where we, and I have 37 resolutions outstanding. Villa Park already passed it.
I was going to say, we passed it, yes.
Yeah, Chad.
So what was that, Villa Park?
Yeah. Irvine was the first city, and then Newport Beach. And it was a nonpartisan, of course, because in some cities it was led by Republicans, in others it was led by Democrats, because it's a human rights issue. It's about protecting our children.
Protecting our children.
Yeah. And so, so I have 37 outstanding resolution. If any of you would like to help get them passed with all your connections, that would be awesome.
And I love that too, because then you can highlight, my suggestion to the commission was that in like the work that you do, you have the plan, right? And you want to put something forward, but that you also have kind of like a quarterly update on the work that the commissioners do together. Like all of these speaking engagements you've had, and highlight that work and how you're working individually on promoting, right, the different pieces of like what's discussed here. I think that's a huge value for the board to understand and to be, because they appoint you, right? So they're able to show the work that you're doing on their behalf, and then also start to promote some of the what your focus areas are, right, such as this. So it doesn't have to be this like waiting till the plan comes out and
right.
Okay.
So I would make a suggestion that if anyone, so like I know you just gave your report here, but if you all would send to Valerie anytime you've gone and spoken or like my luncheon or whatever, just send it to Valerie so she can send it to me. So then that way, it's really easy for me to access that I can put in as a quarterly, or at the end with the final report, we can say, by the way, okay, throughout the year, this is, you know, commissioners went here and spoke here and did this, you know. So if you guys would just jot it down maybe in your notes and then all at once just send it and just say, please forward this to me. And then that way I can save it and compile it and really, instead of me going back through like,
I can have my assistant work on all the speaking engagements I did in 2026, and we'll start with that. The other thing we work on, which ties into what we heard today, is that, as you know, the percentage of minors, victims of human trafficking in Orange County, went up from 36 to 50%. So in the report of the Human Trafficking Task Force in 2023, which covers the two preceding years, the percentage of minors was 36. In the 2025 report, it went up to 50%. Mm-hmm. And the increase is mainly due to sextortion.
Can you clarify that statistic? 50% of what?
It's minors are 50% of the total number of human trafficking victims in Orange County.
Okay, thank you for clarifying. Let me make sure.
It went up because of extortion.
Sextortion, which means that somebody, a teen or a young adult, sent a nude picture of themselves, and then they were extorted financially, put into sex trafficking or both, and some of them have committed suicide because they couldn't pay anymore and they were ashamed to go tell their parents. And there's crime syndicates that gone into this, and they're targeting boys because they found out it's easy money. And so that's what...
Do you have a statistic on how many boys versus girls?
I do have a slide, yes, that I also showed yesterday about the break in ethnic, and the average age is 14. However, the victims in Orange County range from 7 years old to 17. So yes, that's why I do what I do. Can you imagine a 7-year-old being a victim of sex trafficking?
So here's a little kind of on that route, even though we're digressing a little bit, but so Assemblyman, I never say his name, Avelino
Valentino.
So I sit on LegCo, which is part of OUSD's nonprofit. It's just like the coalition to get updates from all the different legislative staffers who kind of give updates on education bills, et cetera, et cetera. And the Assemblyman had tried, and he was focusing on young men, but he tried to, up in Sacramento, create kind of similar to what we have here, which is not necessarily a commission, but kind of a committee on men and what's happening to young men, their suicide rates, the lack of fathers in the home, the lack of their education and whatnot, and it got shot down, and I was really surprised, because it seems like, why would you
why?
Do that?
Why?
It's so important to understand what's going on with our young men. But then we just got an update on yesterday, I guess, that he's kind of approaching this a different way, which I was really happy, and I had asked for a report, and they sent it to me, and I didn't share it with everyone because it's about young men, but it's still, it's good to hear that there are legislators that are also interested in trying to help, because you can't, I mean, we can have great, healthy young women, but if we don't have great, healthy young men, like, then what can we do? So just kind of, that kind of reminded me about suicide rate, you know, men that, young men that do not have the dual parent home or drop out of high school early, et cetera, their suicide rate.
If you can share that with us, that would be awesome.
I'm sorry?
That report.
Yeah, I will forward it to Valerie and she can send
it out. Men are also much more likely to, you know, drug addiction and
absolutely, So we're looking at one side of it, and I'm just, you know, so grateful, thankful we all have that.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, I'll send it out.
Next Tuesday, I'm going to Sacramento with a group of survivors. We're going to be talking to elected officials about the sex abuse that's rampant in the 3 juvenile detention centers in LA that has been ongoing for 50 years, and nothing has been done about it other than create a fund to pay victims and not holding the perpetrators accountable. So that's next Tuesday.
You're talking about the juvenile detention centers, like juvenile hall in Los Angeles. Just to kind of link all these conversations, I was trying to think of like how it relates to the child care conversation. And I think of, you know, today when we talked about disabled children or children with disabilities, and then to Rima's point about the human trafficking, right? Like, I think about when our kids, our families are left to find places for their kids to be without like suitable licensed healthy spaces, how much more vulnerable our kids become to all of these things.
To child abuse, absolutely.
Well, that's how the predators take advantage.
And I was thinking about Mary's Path that we had brought up and the connection there too, because the teens, right, they many of them have their children as well. So
well, they're there in this particular home because they've chosen to have their baby. And so the home is set up specifically for 16 girls plus their babies, and that's their maximum capacity. Yeah. And they're victims of human trafficking. And I've been there and visited, and the girls are not emotionally or intellectually fully developed, for sure.
I'm just thinking, you know, of all the connections and how we can maybe bring in these guest presentations at some point as well. And then I did want to share, I did speak and I'll share it at the City by City event that occurred, I think it was last week, Navigating Challenges Facing Our Immigrant Communities. So it was a cross-sector, nonpartisan event to discuss like the real impacts that we're seeing on our families that identify as immigrant families, mixed status families. And so one of the things I brought forward as a school board member, which I think relates to our work, is I tried to highlight stories of parents, moms, or mom and dad, who there's a specific family that comes to mind that we know mom hasn't left the house all year except for twice. And so that was to bring her child to a medical appointment for emergency and to come to the school for a medical emergency because of the fear around immigration. So again, I'm just thinking, highlighting like our different our families and what they're navigating and the real impacts of and so I know that's a little bit different from childcare, but it was a great space with service providers and folks from all over the county, all even different cities were there. So I'll share that information as well. Maybe a great space to link up in some way as we move forward.
Any other comments?
We have the four, so it's 400 that were ordered. So I'll leave them here for you to distribute. We didn't know how you wanted to do that. I just took 5 for the like just to have for us.
Fantastic. So, Commissioner, please only take what you know you're going to be able to hand out. If you know that you're going to any events, speaking at any councils, anything like that, maybe even if you're going to school boards, if you're going to fundraising events, who knows? Please take them so that we can bring them back. If there are no other comments, I want to thank everyone for your time for coming. And again, thank you for our speakers that came and can't wait for that baby. and so please, we're going to send out the link again. Please, if your name is not up there, we need you to participate so that everyone has the ability to contribute, everyone has the ability to have a discussion, and we can move forward with this second report. And be prepared to come June 4th. Let's pull up our sleeves and we'll get some work done. And I don't think we're going to write a report, but I think we're going to definitely have a direction and a consensus of the couple areas that we want to go. Remember, my view for this is that we're going to really kind of hone in on some couple of really key things, not be as broad as we were with the first one. So I expect this will be much more tailored, pinpointed, kind of this is what we see, what we've heard, the research that we've done. So any questions, please let me know. And with that, I will adjourn the meeting at 11:26, and we'll see you on the floor.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yes, very good.
This is very reassuring. We're focused.